as we welcome Kim Lee Rickett. She's an industrial psychologist, and we're going to talk about life. Kim, welcome. They're just switching. It's good to have you.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. This morning, in the long time no chat.
Yeah, you're always in the shadows. It's your superstar husband that is always there in the limelight. How do you even manage?
I'm going to call it, it's a balancing act. Let's call it the balancing act, where we actually both get to now be each other's cheerleaders. I think that's one thing we've done and done very well, where I'm always running around, and I think this phase of life that I'm now in, it's seeing him run around. So it's quite interesting to have, you know, the tables turn a little bit where I watch him and see him do things, and I go, do I look like that? Is that what you experience when you see me? But it's definitely been a balancing act and a nice one in terms of growth for both of us.
Of course. Kim Lee Ricketts, industrial psychologist, her husband Jared Ricketts is a superstar, a really prolific songwriter, and brilliant stage presence. Great contribution to the South African musical fabric over the last while. We're talking about life today. We were put on this planet to not to be unhappy, and not to hate life. We sometimes worry about everything else other than the life and the moment. The moment we worried about where we should be instead of just embracing this particular moment in all of its glory. Before we get into the nuts and bolts, Kim, I want to know about your favorite book, the one that profoundly impacted your life.
Oh, there's been so many. I think The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. I'm currently reading one about personal branding and how to brand you and who you are. I think those have probably been ones that have stood out for me. Oh, and Who Moved My Cheese?
Okay. Yeah, that one's kind of popped up.
Yes.
I got you. Okay, so let's talk about a good life. What is a good life?
I think a good life is what you make of it. Because everyone's definition of good varies. So I think it's filling yourself and filling your cup with things that make you feel empowered, that make you feel good, and that make you feel happy at the end of the day. So a good life to me looks like filling your cup with things that add value to who you are, and that give you that sense of joy, of true joy, because they say happiness leaves, but joy is everlasting. So what a good life looks for me is that balance between doing things that I love, doing things that are hard, that let me grow, and putting myself in spaces that are uncomfortable so that I'm able to grow. One such space is, I think you alluded to a little bit earlier, is the music industry. So managing my husband, managing Jared, being an industrial psychologist, so getting to engage with people. I also am a fashion designer to get to explore my creativity. And I'm also actually an author, so I should have said my favorite book is the one that I'm a co-author of, because that's also there, and that's about the fourth industrial revolution and how we revolutionize the way that people do work and people show up at work. And I think all those things, if I look at it holistically, a good life for me is having a balance between that, understanding where you fit in terms of family, in terms of husband, in terms of kids, and wearing the many hats that we have, understanding what your role is in all of that, and how you make those work for you.
Yeah. Conspicuously absent is, of course, the things that you have to do, because a good life essentially means you do the things that you want to do, but we got to pay the bond, we got to pay the rent, so there's things that we have to do,
and
sometimes those things are more important. Or when are those things that we have to do important? Should we just abandon them?
Sorry, you said when are the things
that we have to do? So there's there's the good life where you do the things that you want to do, and then there's the realities of life, the things that you have to do, and that most importantly to pay the bond, to pay the rent. I think so, and that's the difficult thing, isn't it?
It is. But I think even in those things that we have to do, it's about what is the good that you can take out of it. What are the lessons that those things are teaching you? I actually had a conversation just yesterday with a group of ladies where sometimes we're stuck in a situation that we can't remove ourselves to actually see the opportunity. So let's say, for example, you're doing a job and you're not entirely happy with the job that you're doing because it comes with, okay, so admin. Admin and me are not friends. I think everyone who knows me knows that me and admin are not friends. It's something I don't enjoy doing, but it's something I have to do. And what I'm learning about it is how to put that schedule together. It's helping me with time management. It's helping me with planning and organizing everything else that I need to do to create the life that I want to live. And I think I'm using that as an example, but the conversation I was having was literally just so stuck in something that the opportunity that you're missing is that actually other things are coming from that opportunity or that situation that you find yourself in. So I think as much as we need to pay the bills, it's how are those things that we're doing enabling us to do the things that we really want to do or enable us to do the things that really make us happy.
And it is about building a life around your values, is it not? Ultimately, it is about that.
Yes, and so firstly, understanding what your values are and not shifting from that. I think many situations require us to rethink where we find ourselves, but being true to who we are and truly having a stronghold on what those values are to me and how you apply that in every situation, how you apply that in the things that you don't want to do, but also in the things that do give you joy. So firstly, knowing what your values are, letting others know what those values are, I think sometimes is important because communication is the foundation for, you know, everyone getting an insight or an inkling of who it is that you are as a person. So I think sharing those values, sometimes we assume that we're sharing the values, but knowing it means that you can stay true to what it is. And if you make others aware, that you let them into your world or into what is important to you as well.
Yeah, then the chicken and the egg kind of question. It comes via WhatsApp, this question. Can you please ask your guest how people who live in poverty experience abuse, etc., live a good life? I feel a perspective is coming from a very middle-class perspective. How would you respond to that? How can we make what we believe in, and that is a values-based life, a universal property? Mm-hmm.
So thank you for the question, firstly. I think the important thing to know is that, and I always say this, it's yes, understanding and appreciating the circumstances that we come from, but using that as a foundation of how we build the values-based life that we want to live. And I come from a home where my granny was a domestic worker, and she took care of me. And I'm now studying towards my PhD. And how I've you know, transitioned from look at what granny did, look at the things we did, where we also didn't have, is understanding that that wasn't going to define how far I go. Using the tools such as bursaries, such as whatever else is out there, but researching and equipping myself with how can I make where I am work for me to make granny proud. Because her values were one of hard work. She grafted, she had 11 kids, and she looked after her grandchildren. So she sets the foundation of, I'm a woman with the resources that I have, and what she had done was, given the fact that she, in her area, was the only one with running water back in the day, she then gave the community, you know, buckets of water and was able to empower them through what she had. So for me, it's about looking at what it is you do have and not focusing on what you don't have and how you make what you do have work for you and open and unlock other opportunities that are available. Because if we get stuck in what we don't have, we never grow. So even in a poverty-stricken world, in terms of looking at what I don't have, I think it's easier to go, I don't have and I can't and I'm not sure and I can't see the light, as opposed to dreaming and looking at what is possible and looking at where you are, what resources do you have at your disposal to enable you to get to those things that you do want to have. And it's simply having conversations with people. Like I said, I had to go to the library, research things in terms of what I wanted to do and understand that my dreams are valid. So just because I came from that circumstance didn't mean that I need to get stuck in it. But what it means is, how do I enable myself and empower myself through the situation going, how do I do better with the values that I've been instilled or that I've been taught from my granny as an example?
I think it's such an important thing, and people would often write that off to a middle-class kind of perspective. You are in cloud cuckoo land, but that is the reality. It is absolutely personal. In response to that particular question, I feel her perspective is coming from a very middle-class perspective. Mm. It is not true. It was my reality too. I was told that I do not have, quote unquote, the talent to be a radio presenter. I was denied opportunities because of the color of my skin. I would not accept that. So if we give credit, you're saying, to poverty, then poverty is going to be our boss. But if we give credit to the greatness in ourselves, we are going to start that journey of escaping poverty.
Correct.
Right. I think that's a very, very important point. What is the role of industrial psychology? Because that is chicken or the egg. Get your mind out of it first, and your mind will pull your body out of any kind of reality. It is capable of doing that. How can industrial psychology and psychology in general be deployed to get our minds out of our paradigms wherever they are?
So, you know, I think it takes me back to why did I start? Why industrial psychology for me? And I've always been inquisitive to understand human behavior, to understand the mind, to understand what actually drives people and what makes them tick. And I think how it can be deployed is to take it back to grassroots to go, okay, so who are we dealing with? What are people going through now? Because things have shifted. And like I said, in terms of the fourth industrial revolution, things are shifting and continuously shifting. And I think it also, for me, it starts with acknowledging where we are. And then understanding the importance of self-care in the process. So yes, getting the mind right, getting the mind clean, getting the mind strong, but using that in terms of, okay, there are hardships and acknowledging, and this is why I'm saying understanding where you are, but also acknowledging where you're coming from, to be able to go, where is it that I see myself going? And deploying industrial psychology is exactly that. I do it on the daily. It's not always easy because I also have to learn to practice exactly what I'm saying in terms of being kind to myself, understanding that I'm human and things are going to affect me in a certain way, but not becoming a result or not allowing it to define how far I go.
Kim Lee Ricketson, an insight into a happy life, full of love. Kim Lee Ricketts is an industrial psychologist, and some insights. We were talking about magic, and that's where you did fit in today, Kim, but we're gonna have to wrap it there, unfortunately. How we found the magic in the books that we read at a young age, and how that maybe helped us to escape the paradigms that society can very easily impose on our existence.